copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
This workshop, and I use the word because it is going to be work, and I'm going to do the least amount of the work, and you're going to do the greater amount of the work. So that's the nature of how things are going to go. We're going to try to get into some things that probably are not normally available through your normal lecture kinds of things, and that's why we're going to have some grouped work and some discussion and hopefully some insights. What we're going to do, we've done in quite a number of different countries and with virtually thousands and thousands of people. So kind of relax, because at the end of the day, I think you're going to have fun. Okay? But to start the fun, I have a question for you. How many of you think you're normal? Okay, if you're not sure, consider the alternative. Yeah. Okay, you got the names of those who didn't raise their hand. Yeah, you got a photograph. Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's not really the important question, but it's important from the standpoint of getting us to think. What happens when we start to think that we're normal? I actually think it's a good thing that we think of ourselves as normal. But we can also then cross a very fine, probably unconscious line into thinking, if I'm normal, maybe I am also therefore the... What's the root of normal?
Norm.
Are they different, normal and norm? In what way? Anybody, in what way is it different to think that I'm normal than if I'm thinking I'm the norm?
The norm is just bog standard average.
Yeah. If I'm the norm, then I become the plumb line by which I can judge you. I'm the judge of whether your behavior, your speech patterns, your beliefs are good or bad. And I judge them by whether you agree with me and look like me and speak like me and use my language and have my beliefs. It actually becomes quite dangerous then when we move from thinking that we're normal to then thinking that, and probably unconsciously thinking, that we're also the norm. So that's going to be something that we're going to be aware of today. But what we're going to do is find out that there's probably five kinds of normality beyond ourselves, and we're one of them. But we're also mixtures of those normalities. And what we're going to be discovering is, in what ways do we tend to communicate, and with what kinds of values do we communicate? How do other people differ from us? How does that affect our leadership? How does it affect the other important relationships in our lives, like parenting, like being a spouse, a child, that is having parents, and in our work environment, and of course, primarily, for today at least, leadership. To start this, I'm going to ask you to do a little bit of work. And David, would you like to start from the front? Carl, where are you? Oh, David, you can do it. Yeah, either way. And then, Carl, if you want to follow up with this worksheet. So you're going to have two worksheets. And I'm going to give you about 10 minutes in which you work on this. You're going to need a pen or a pencil or some kind of marker. And you will need worksheet CS1 and worksheet CS2. Take worksheet CS1 then, and let me just read with you, and then from this point on I'll have you do some work independently. The instructions, as you'll see right here, are we all together? The instructions are, on the next page, CS2, there are 80 statements which are clustered in pairs. So just take a look at that second page, and you'll see the pairing. Please circle one number from each pair which is most typical of you. There are times when both of them will be most typical, and there are times when neither will be typical. But go with your first instinct, which usually works out. I guarantee you that, at least in the thousands that have done this, you're not going to be embarrassed. So just, relax. it's actually going to be quite fun. There are no wrong answers. Make your choice as spontaneously as possible. Remember, only one item of each pair is to be selected, so that you should have 40 items circled at the conclusion of the exercise. And then when you've done that, you proceed to the next page. You come back to this first page, and the numbers that you circled on the second page, you then circle those numbers. So if you circled item 1, you'll circle a 1 here. And if you, and then the next one, if you circle 3, then you find 3. Now, I want you to watch me at this point. There's a pattern, so that'll make it much more quickly for you. The numbers generally go down on the left-hand column, and then the second column over, they go back up and down and up and down and up. So over here will be the highest numbers. You'll start out over here with the lowest numbers, going from top to bottom. A couple times they're juxtaposed, but you'll catch on very quickly in that one. I'm going to give you just a very brief history of this test or assessment. It was developed by a Belgian fellow who was in charge of, he was a senior vice president in World Bank in Brussels. And he was charged with the responsibility of helping people to come together and to understand each other better. And by achieving better understanding, there would be less misunderstanding, less conflict, less problems, less confusion. And so Pierre Casse, or Casse, the accent got off, I'm not sure, on the end, C-A-S-S-E, designed this for the World Bank. I ended up taking several workshops from Pierre in Canada. And when I took the assessment, just as you are doing now, and as a result of that workshop, it revolutionized the way in which I saw my family, my employer, my relatives, my father, etc. That is, it gave me insight into these kinds of relationships. But the most important insight was the one that I achieved about myself in relationship to other people. So this has been a very valuable thing. It came out of the World Bank, and Pierre did some wonderful work there. Let me give you the kind of the three outcomes of the workshop that, in contemporary language, has to do with knowing ourselves better, which is what today they call emotional intelligence. What our values are, how our values influence our choices, how our choices and values affect others, what our limitations are, and knowing our limitations so that we don't get victimized by things that we're not aware of or that we miscalculate. And are the best place that we have in the team, in the body of Christ, and how we exercise our leadership from our particular perspective. So knowing ourselves, which is emotional intelligence. Knowing others, which is today what is often called social intelligence. To see the best in the other person rather than the worst. There's a tendency in many of us to see the other person's faults first, and to begin to define them by their faults. That, of course, is unfortunate. I don't want people to do that to me. I don't want to do that to others either. The ability to suspend judgment until you begin to see the whole of the other person. You begin to know them in various environments, to learn from others. And then I think one of the most important characteristics of leadership is the ability to show what servanthood means. So how do you serve other people? If you serve them in the same way that you like to be served yourself, there's a good chance your servanthood is not going to come across as serving, but more as dominating or oppressing or controlling or manipulating. That is negatives. Okay, so we're going to learn how to serve out of our frame of reference, but into the other person's frame of reference. And then to affirm the diversity that God has given to us, that He has made as part of His creation. Then the third goal is to build bridges. That's called relational intelligence in today's academics. So we begin then in this relational intelligence to begin to know ourselves, know others, so now we can adjust expectations according to the kinds of things that we know. To be less competitive in our relationships and more cooperative. To be willing to change for the sake of the relationship, knowing that we're not giving up something that's vital and core to our being, but we're giving up for the purpose of serving others. And in serving others, we actually add to who we are. And then to be able to encourage others in ways that build them and nurture them and edify them. And then to be proactively and sensitively engaging others in the mission that God has given us collectively to do, and to work with individuals as well as groups. So a lot of leadership implications. Any questions now before we move ahead? I'm working on the assumption that we're all finished with the scoring, okay? Now, you've got five scores on the left-hand side of your scoring sheet. Is that correct? Four scores, I'm sorry? Yeah, and those four scores should add up to 40, all right? Now, we're going to be talking about those scores, and let's switch over to the... on this side of the aisle, you have some sheets, and pick those up if they're next to you and pass them down. And this is our next stage of working through this process. Pierre Case, or Cassé, determined that there were four basic communication styles. I actually felt that there were five, and you'll see the fifth one, but there's four here, and then we'll develop the fifth one. And as it turns out, the fifth one is really one of the more popular communication styles, and the reason that that one is so critical and so important is because that's who I am. Okay, so you'll understand me in a few minutes. All right, so the first style, as you see, is the action person. And you might want to put that next to style one. Just write the word action there, and that'll be for your reference in the future. And the action person is concerned about getting things done, achieving and doing. In the broad scope of things, that's kind of who they are. That's how they define themselves. Those are the values that they bring to virtually any kind of situation. It's how they manage their lives. The second style, and that's style two on your worksheet, is process. This person tends to ask a different question. Not what needs to get done, but how ought things to get done. What's the process by which we go from A to B and, you know, eventually to the goal? So their concern has to do more with strategies, with how to organize for the task, the kinds of information, the facts that we need in order for us to move forward in a very responsible way and to get to the end in a quality kind of fashion. The third style is the people person. And the people person asks yet a different question, and that's the question, who? Who will I be working with? Who will be affected by this? Who's involved? And so their tendency is to focus on communication. That can sometimes just be reduced to talking. That is, it's important to talk these things through. A lot of emphasis on relationship, building, sustaining, repairing relationships, and then working together. Teamwork is really important. Getting along and getting things done and enjoying it as we do it. It's all about people, isn't it? Would be their comment. The fourth style, and that's number four then, is the idea person. The idea person says, yes, what is important? Getting things done, that's important. Of course it is. And how it's done, of course, that's necessary. Anybody knows that. And who's to be involved, that, of course, is important as well. But the really important thing is, why do you want to be doing this in the first place? Why is this more important than anything else? Where is this in the priority, in the big picture of life? How does this fit in? How do you know you're not doing something trivial rather than something important? So the why question. And in the why question, then, the idea person tends to focus on the abstract or the conceptual. That's a good part of the world. Sometimes we would say the cognitive, but not necessarily. Cognitive person can also be any of these others. The idea person tends to focus on theories. That is, what have other people done? What does the research say? What are the findings? what evidence do we have? And they also then tend to focus on innovation, or another word would be for change. They love the new and the different and the novel, moving ahead, exploring new frontiers. Okay? So that's a basic summary. We're going to move more deeply as we move along. But are there, well, we got one last one, I said, and this is on your sheet as well, the blend person. Not to be confused with bland, okay? That's not what we're talking about here, the blend. The blend person, if there are four-part blend, they draw somewhat equally from all four of the styles. You might say they're an amalgam or a mixture or a blend. Now, some people might be three-part blend. And if they're three-part blend, the circle would probably go out a little bit farther on those three parts. If you have two equally high scores, that is within 1 or 2 points of each other, that would be simply bimodal, okay? But let's step back for a moment. What does a four-part blend look like? Look at your four scores. If they're within 3 points between the highest and the lowest of your four scores, you would be a four-part blend. That is, you scored somewhat equally on all of these. Now, I had there was a Fuller seminary prof who, every time he took this test, we used to do workshops for one of the big oil companies in the States. Every time we were there, he took this just to be part of the group. He scored 10, 10, 10 every time. Total blend. And his wife came one time, and she says, yep, his name was Dudley. That's Dudley. He's as bland as they can get. Well, she said it out loud. I don't know if that was very smart, but that's how it worked. So if you were, if you were a perfect blend, you would score 10, 10, 10. But most of us are like 11, 11, 9, 9, or 12, 11, 10, 11, or whatever constitutes 40, okay? So if you're a four-part blend, that's how we score. Take a look at your three highest scores. If they're within 3 points of each other, then you're a three-part blend. And if your two highest scores are within 1 or 2 points, maybe 3 points, but 1 or 2 points for sure, then you're bimodal. Okay, so there's a category that I think fits everybody here. And in a moment, we're going to give you some work to do based on being in these categories. It's interesting I taught at Wheaton College in an undergrad program for a number of years. All my college students wanted to know, so if you're high action, who should you be marrying? What would your spouse look like? What would be the perfect score? So you could kind of see them handing out these inventories before chapel or something like that, and announcing the winner at the end of chapel. The reality is that that's probably not the best way to approach the situation. Because virtually every combination exists. So if that's not the best question, what would the best question look like? The best question probably looks like, what does a mature action person look like? And how do they find out the maturity level of the person they're marrying? Because that's really a pretty important kind of thing. Another question might be, how flexible are you in terms of differences? I argue that marriage is the greatest cross-cultural experience you're ever going to have. And it's a lifetime experience. So how flexible are you, etc. All right, you have another worksheet now. And so we're going to go one step further in terms of the depth of understanding, and then we'll pretty soon have an assignment for you. Number one, everyone scores something on each of the four styles. Now, it's true that every once in a while, somebody will have a zero, and I'll talk about that in just a few moments. But by and large, from a functional standpoint, everybody has to function in all four of these areas. You just can't live life without that. Number two, the higher the score, the greater the commitment to that style. Now, your highest score would be what? 20, yeah. So if you're up, high begins around 16. And so if you're at 16 or higher, that's a very high score, and you're most comfortable when you're functioning in the area of your highest score. You're most relaxed. You feel the most confident. You're not burning a lot of emotional energy because you're in your element, so to speak. You're in the world where you feel good about things. Number three, the lower the score, the lower the comfort in using it. Low begins around 6. And as you get around 6 or below, you begin to feel discomfort. And a lot of times you don't know why you're feeling uncomfortable, but the reason is that you're in an area that you feel less confident and your score is low here, and it's just not who you are. And so you have a greater level of discomfort as your score goes down towards a 6 and below a 6. And I'll be honest with you here, my lowest score in the early stages and when I got married was about a 4 on people. And that was probably being optimistic. my wife, on the other hand, scored about an 18 on people. So you see the cross-cultural dimensions here immediately. And you can look at this as five cultures if you want to. I think it's completely appropriate. But her world and my world, while we loved each other deeply, she wanted to be with people almost all the time. Being with people drained me immensely. By the way, when you're functioning in the area of your lowest score for any extended period of time, you burn a lot of emotional energy. That's why you're tired. You're weary, you're fatigued, and you don't know why. Well, this helps us understand. Now, here's the other element. It takes you twice as long to restore emotional energy units expended as it does physical energy units expended. That's why some of you who preach or are pastors, that's a very powerful emotional kind of process that you go through on Sundays, because you're preaching the Word of God. That's a heavy responsibility. And you're responsible for the care of the flock. Heavy responsibility. At least when I pastored, the end of Sunday, I was beat. And that's why many take Mondays off, because it's a restoration time. And now we begin to understand what happens when emotional energy is expended. Now, the preaching part of Sunday was great. It was spending all that time with people that burned my energy. Okay, see, 4, all right? But what are you going to do? That's part of the job, and you have to do it. And actually, over time, I began to realize that my wife had so much to teach me. And so I began to learn from her how to connect with people.
Do the scores change over time?
The course?
The scores.
Do the scores change over time? Mine did, but I never achieved a 16 or an 18 on people, but I was around 8 or 9 or 10 possibly, but 8 or 9. And one of the goals that you may want to set for yourself, if your scores are low, like mine was, is how do I get that score up so it's not a limiting factor, so that I begin to enjoy people rather than be taxed and drained by the relationship. And it took some time and energy. But my oldest son is just like me. And he went through a process by which he had only one friend. His brother had lots of friends. And he wanted to be more like his mom and more like his brother. And so he and I together watched my younger son and my wife, his mom and brother, and we began to see what they did. And we modeled them. So, for example, my wife smiles every time she sees somebody. Well, isn't that a nuisance to have to smile every time? You should have a reason for smiling. I mean, not just because you're alive, but some other reason, some better reason. But they did it, all right? And so I forced myself. And I, you know what? I felt so hypocritical because I wasn't smiling inside. You get this little plastic thing here, you know. But you know what? Even if it feels hypocritical, if it's the right thing to do, you do it. Because I had an unfortunate and probably negative habit that I was now practicing, and it felt artificial and plastic, but pretty soon it felt more natural. And it felt more natural as people gave me positive feedback. All of a sudden, the relationship seemed to be more smoother. And it was more enjoyable being with people. And pretty soon, I didn't feel the fatigue factor nearly so much. So your lower score is a very important one. It's very important to know. It's about as important as your highest score. Was there another question? No? Any others? All right. Let's continue. People use different scores at different times. Unconsciously, we move back and forth into those various zones. What you can do now is realize or have a conscious awareness of what you're doing. And you'll know why you're uncomfortable or why you're comfortable or why this is difficult to do or why you procrastinate or why you are energized or depleted. Number six, circumstances may alter our scores for a time. Now, that's part of the answer to your question. So when my wife, who scored a very high people score, like 18 or 19, when she did her PhD program, you can't be a people person and complete a PhD program. I mean, you got to stop going to the parties and hit the books and write papers. And that was agony. But she did it. And she actually became a blend person for that period of time. And then as soon as she got her PhD, it's boing, you know, right back to the party scene. Anyway, no, I'm obviously exaggerating here. But yeah, we adjust. We're flexible. But now you understand what's happening. Rather than just being frustrated, you say, okay, I'm functioning in the area of a low score, and I understand that. But I got to do it because there's a goal that I have that I think God has set before me, and I want to do it for the glory of God. Therefore, let's get rid of this frustration and realize that this is perseverance. This is self-discipline. This is what it takes sometimes in life, getting through it. Number seven. Quite important. Everyone is a composite of all the scores. So why are we labeling you action, process, etc., if everybody's a composite? What those single words do is they create, they're sort of like windows into that person. After a while, you begin to realize that this is an idea person, or this is a people person. And now, what that does is it gives you the freedom to adjust your style, to speak their language, to speak into their frame of reference, and you change to serve them. Information is power. But power can be used to oppress or to serve. I used to train, General Motors. It's like GM Opel in Europe, I think. I trained General Motors salespeople for a number of years. Then I found out they were using this information to manipulate their clients, and I stopped. That was a wrong way to use information. And I could do it too. And I did it sometimes. And when I realized what I was doing, I was ashamed. But what it does now is that you realize that I have second highest scores and third highest scores. But if I know who you are, and I can usually figure that out quite quickly by saying you're either process or your idea, then I can begin to adjust myself to who you are and serve you from your frame of reference rather than asking you to become like me. I, in fact, try to become more like you to serve you. And then under stress, number eight, people revert to their primary style. This is where we're going to close. But what happens when an action person gets under stress? What do they do to relieve their stress? How is that different from the process person and what they do under stress situations, or the people or the idea? Or the blend person, what in the world does that person do under stress? Because, you know, they're multi-directional all the time. The interesting thing here is that if I want to help you relieve your stress, I assume you're like me. And we do that with our spouses all the time and our children. And often by my imposing on you how I handle stress, it makes your stress worse. So in terms of serving people, sometimes we actually don't serve them at all. We make the situation worse. Because we don't know their frame of reference. We don't know where they're coming from. Now, I was going to talk just for a moment about the low score. Sometimes the people do get zeros, and very often they're not at all aware of it. But if that's your score, or it's a one or something like that, that's something that you may want to look at the limitations of that lowest score, because that may have some serious limiting factors for you. In the missionary work, and I've done this in a number of languages in probably a dozen or more countries, missionaries who have low scores, especially in the area of people, are often not very effective, because ministry is usually people intensive. So it's something we all need to look at, and that's something that I had to look at, and that's why I'm telling you my people score was low. And in order to be a pastor to people, that was something that I had to acknowledge. I had to admit where I was weak, where I had limitations, and I saw how those limitations were affecting the pieces of my ministry that I wanted to be effective in, but I wasn't because of that kind of score. All right? This is going to be the last piece of information, and then in about 5 or 6 minutes' time, we're going to put you into work groups, and we'll take you right up to the break. Okay, just follow me then as I work down this left-hand column, and it will give us more information then. And with this information then, you're going to meet with people who are like you and fill out the rest of the piece of paper here. Not all the squares, but a few of them. The action person, follow me as I move from top to bottom. Now, the action person tends to focus on productivity, accomplishment, feedback, task, getting the task done, task-oriented, on practical matters, on getting things done, doing. They focus on results, the here and now. They focus on being active or activity and goal-oriented. Now, keep in mind, if your action score is high, most of those will be pretty characteristic of you. If your second highest score is that's fairly close is process, some of these won't be terribly characteristic. You'll have some characteristics from the next box that will also be true of you. So your second highest score flavors your highest score. And that's something that requires more individual thought and reflection. But let me just ask a question quickly, and we'll do this at the end of each one. How does an action person express love? By doing things for other people. Yeah. And that's their love language. I know that, you know, you've probably read some books on that. But that's the love language, the action person. My dad was an action person. He never expressed love verbally at all to anybody that I'm aware of. But he would do things. And it took me a long time to figure out that when Dad did things for me, that was his way of saying, I love you, or I care about you, or I value you, or I'm glad you're my son. But if we don't understand that, then we look at what they don't do, and we criticize what they don't do. And that affects the relationship. All right? The process person, they tend to focus on gathering data and facts, analysis, planning, long and short-range goals, very important. We've got to know where we're going. Know where the target is. They like to establish methods and means by which those goals are achieved. Scheduling, of course. How long are we going to take? How much time is it? Reporting, evaluation, and then refining and fine-tuning. What have we learned from all of this? How does a process person express love?
Criticizing you.
Well, they'll see limitations, and they're simply pointing out what's good for you. You say it one way, I'll try to spin it just a little bit. But that's right. But they, in pointing out what will really help you, it comes across as criticism. But that's an act of love on the part of the process person. But essentially, what they do is they create a stable, safe life for you. Don't we have a retirement fund, you know, so we can retire and do things. Don't we have a college fund for the children? You know, aren't we making our house payments? Those are the issues that the process person, it's making life manageable. And for the process person, the best surprise is no surprise. Life is under control, all right? And when it's under control, that's how they express their care for their loved ones. People at group. They tend to focus on getting along, people's needs and feelings. Dialogue, just talking together. That's such a wonderful thing. Loving and caring. Peace, harmony. Pleasing others. And, of course, cooperation. How do they express love?
Hugging.
Yeah. They generally are high-touch people. If you're a low-touch person, that, you know, it's kind of creepy. But yes, by touching, hugging, it's what they do. And what else? They're often verbal people, not always, but often very verbal people. So they express their affirmation, their edification, their love and care. And gifts, very much so. Yeah, gifts is a form of, all right? The idea person. Now, this is a tough one. Because this is the lowest percentage-wise, and I'll come back to the percentages in just a moment. The idea person tends to focus on reasons. That's the why issue. Ideals. What would this world look like if we just got our act together? Concepts. They're forward-looking or futuristic. They focus on knowledge. Now, their knowledge is a different knowledge. It's a knowledge of the big picture of things, whereas a process person, it's knowledge of the details. You know, if we don't tend to the details, but knowledge for the idea person is of a very different nature. So they focus on the abstract, as we mentioned earlier, on theory, principles, and their synthesizers. There's two ways of creating truth. One is analysis and the other is synthesis. And this is the way in which the idea people create truth. How does the idea person show love?
If you have a great idea, it's a soul.
By the affirmation of by listening to them and affirming their ideas, that's how you express love to them. How do they show love to you? Generally, by sharing their mind with you. It's a very obscure kind of idea, but if the idea person allows you into their mind, that is their act of love. You are a celebrated, unique and very isolated individual who gets inside their head. And that's the idea person. They're also the hardest people to win to Christ. Now, the blend person. What do they focus on? Variety. Absolutely. Movement, that is, back and forth. They don't like to stay one place very long. They have a wide expanse of interests. Diversity is something that they cherish. Diversity of experiences, diversity of environments, and relationships, for that matter. And so, in summary, all of the above, but not as intensive. The blend person. And so how do they express love? Well, just depends on how they feel at the moment. What's happening. Now, can we go back to the slide with the colored slide? I'll just give you a quick breakdown here. Somewhere in the vicinity of about 16 to 18% of the population, and this population now numbers somewhere in the 20,000 range, but I've only done it with probably 4,000 or 5,000 people. So roughly 16 to 18% here. When you get down to the people category, roughly 33 to 35% of the population, and much of that population has been missionaries. So this might be slightly inflated, but I don't think so, because I've also done it with faculties of schools, boards of trustees, etc. The idea group is about 10%, 10 or 11%, and they are the least understood. And the blend is roughly in the 28 to 30% range, just so you get some kind of a big picture here. All right. Now, if your highest score is action, this is where you're going to find yourself in a group. If your highest score is action, let me see your hand. And you're not a blend, but you're action. That's your highest score. Okay. Action people, in a moment, we'll go to that table. Okay, your highest score is process. You're not a three-part or four-part blend, you're process. Okay, you'll go to the table straight across here. And the people group, how many are you? Highest score is people, but again, not a blend. Back in the corner. You guys, if you don't mind, keep it down. I mean, I know you're going to enjoy this, but there's... Just be sensitive. You can see that my score was 4, right? On people. Idea. How many of you are idea? Okay, that table back there. And I think then the blend people that remain. Three-part and four-part blend. If you're bimodal, come and see me, and I'll ask you a question or two. That is two parts equally high, two parts, yeah. Two parts. Yeah, just check with me. I'll ask you some questions. All right. You've got about 17 or so minutes until the break, but if you want to work into the break, that's up to you. To what degree you take a break is also up to your group. Here's your assignment. There's a sheet of paper on your table, and what I want you to do is fill out... the last one. If your highest score, let's say the people group might be the highest. If you're in the people group, you'll put about 5 items in the box under strengths and about 5 items under limitations. If you have time to put 1 item in the other boxes, do that. But work on your own, and this is a group project, so you have to kind of agree what goes in there. Then write strengths on the top half of the sheet of paper that you've got and the limitations on the bottom half, and we'll have you give a very brief report, and we'll see how you define yourself. Okay, so that's your assignment. Fill this out, transfer it to the sheet. That is, transfer your own item to the sheet, not the single items in the other boxes. Find your table. Go to work. How'd you feel about it? Did you like it? Did you feel like you're at home? People of your own kind, people who really understand you?
Yes.
Yeah? It is a good feeling, especially if you're blender idea, because in particular, they sort of find that they do have a home, that there are others like them out there, they're not alone in this world, and they have a role in the body of Christ, etc. Okay, at this point, we're going to have each group, so there's not an action person. There's a couple that were high action, but they were also within the blend category. So we will come back to action a little bit later and go over that group, and I'll do that. But right now we'll suspend them. So the process group, do we have a spokesperson for that group? If you'd like to come up here, please.
To those nobody from action?
There were 3 people who had fairly high action, but it turned out they were also... Yes, exactly, like you. Well, here's what I did with some of you who had some difficulty deciding. When I asked what you do under stress, the action, for example, the process person and the idea person both withdraw under stress. But the process person withdraws to analyze, to think, to evaluate, to reflect. What would I do differently next time? How could we have avoided the problem? And that's going over and over in your mind. The idea person generally withdraws or escapes, really is a better word, into a world of some kind of fantasy. These days, that fantasy seems to be video games, but also Harry Potter kinds of literature. They get into a world where things just seem to work out and they can let things go. And it allows them to escape from the problems of this world. And people just keep doing dumb things around me, and I've just got to get away from these turkeys, that kind of thing. So they both escape, or they both need to be in isolation, but for very different directions and for very different reasons. But then they generally are energized, and then they come back and engage reality again. We'll talk about stress with the others in a few minutes. So, Mark, you want to come up here? And I'll hold this for you, and you can tell us about the strengths then of the process group.
Okay. Handwriting, that's our first strength we noticed in our group. The quality of my handwriting here, hope you appreciate that. We didn't have total agreement, but pretty much agreement So what we felt was being objective because of assessing things in accordance with the facts, or at least the facts as we understand them. An emphasis on risk, looking at the implications and what might happen.
Are you high risk or low risk people?
We didn't really discuss that. The tendency, I think, would be towards being low risk, generally,
yeah,
from the way the conversation
was. Why would you be low risk? Dave and I are kind of engaging here together, so come on up here, Dave, and be with us in this conversation.
Okay.
Why would you tend to be low risk, do you think?
I've become a spokesman for more than I signed up for now, haven't I?
Well, or you can call in somebody, too. That's one of your privileges.
Do we have comments from people in the group? Why are we low risk?
Because we calculate everything.
Yes, and it takes time to calculate everything. And so process people tend to be low risk. So if your project is extremely important for the good of the ministry, the organization, in your leadership role, you want a process person involved because you don't want to make a mistake. Or the mistake will be too costly. The action person, however, is high or low risk. I gave you the clue.
Generally
high risk. Just get the job done. Don't worry about these things. Now you can see how quickly the conflict emerges here. Idea people, high or low risk? Pretty much high risk. They want change. They love change. They want to see what happens if we go this direction.
Yes.
So you begin to realize how quickly conflict emerges in these situations. And then you begin to think, well, the action person is the adversary of the process person. Not true. They have a legitimate perspective. If it's a low priority item, maybe we go the action route. But if this is an extremely important decision, who are we going to listen to? The people who have thought about it the most, who are least likely to make a mistake. I have a son. When I buy a car or buy new tires, I say, "Son, what should I buy?" And about 6 months later, in some cases, like a year, you know, oh, sheesh. Okay, so they're low risk. But keep in mind, that's exactly what you want in certain circumstances.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So imagine this, you know, the saying, ready, aim, fire. The action person is ready, fire, aim. And the process person is ready, ready, ready. Ready, ready. Ready, ready, ready. Aim.
Yeah.
Aim. I'll get to the fire later. And so you can manage the tension between those two people that exist. It's not that one is better than the other. If I have an accountant, I want my accountant to be a process person who's very systematic in the way they think about things. When they file my income taxes, I want to make sure that it's done right. I don't want to go to jail for not paying my income taxes. But if I'm in a war zone, I want an action person. I want to know what hill we're going to take and make sure we get there, and let's hope for the best. So those strengths of both action or process or people, they have an application at different times.
So, now continue, Mark. Every once in a while, you'll allow us this kind of dialogue.
You jump in with 2 feet, by all means. Organized. Mm-hmm. Like to think things through, plan things out a little bit, make sure you take things a step at a time, know where you're going and what comes next. That's important. Improvers was mentioned, but that's really improvers in the context of process. Once something is up and running, you can fiddle about with it and make it better so that it's more efficient, so that it puts less stress on the system and on the people. And then planning was mentioned. Planning is important because it's related to wanting to think things through, wanting to assess the implications of the risk. And so you think, well, if I make this decision, this will affect all of that. We need to think about where it leads and what comes next.
Okay, great. Other comments about the strengths of the process person? Maybe you wrote them on your charts. Maybe you have thought about them. But what else would you contribute here? Yeah, and you don't have to be from the process group necessarily. But any further thoughts?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Or maybe later?
No.
Okay.
If it relates, yeah.
How do you, because if you're working with a process person, like sometimes I find my experience is that there's a lot of emotions because I'm the action person. So, you know, this, like, especially if my friend or somebody is the mm-hmm. process person. So how to distinguish mean, actually, that it's like, you know, you've been thinking about it, and it's the you know, it's not the fear that's, because sometimes it looks like fear, you know, that people don't want to go in a certain direction. So, I mean, obviously, is there any way to kind of, you know, judge it, or like how to actually talk to the process person and ask, okay, is that out of fear, or is it really out of, you know, the way you are, and the you know, because sometimes it's just so difficult to judge, because I would say, okay, that's fear, let's go, you know. So is there any, do you have any thoughts about that, guys?
Do you want me to comment on that?
Please.
It can be fear. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do is convince people that their fear is irrational. So say to them, I think this is a good idea. Uh-huh. How can we get this done?
You can reduce the fear for the process person if you assure them that you're going to take responsibility.
Okay.
The fear comes if they feel that they have to take their responsibility upon themselves. The other thing, and over the years I've had a number of assistants who are process people, and while they weren't the easiest people to work with, I found them the most valuable people to work with. And for this reason, when I told them that they had 1 week or 3 months or whatever to make a decision, and that it was low priority, medium priority, or high priority, that was the kind of structure that they needed in order to function at optimum strength. And then we were able to communicate without misunderstandings, because they knew exactly the structure in which they would, and the, you know, the time frames and so on, and they knew what priority it was. And if it was low priority, then I tried to give them a time frame so that they wouldn't give it a lot at a priority that wasn't there. So the more information you can give them, the more they're comfortable, and it lowers the risk factor that they feel, or the fear factor that they feel. And I found that usually when I was meeting with our board then, I always brought my process person with me, and every once in a while a board member would be addressing a certain issue, and this person sitting next to me would slide a file over on my lap, and I'd say, I happen to have that information right here, and that person made me feel, made me look far better than I really was. And then I had to go out and buy them lunch. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank
you. Okay, any other thoughts or observations? Let's take this side of the ledger. They'll probably have more comments here. Why do you say that?
Well,
fear of what?
What's the worst that could happen? Don't ask that question. It's a little bit like that. It's not only if it goes wrong, it takes time to process where it might end up if it goes wrong. But also, if the process is happening and for some reason people don't adhere to it, you think we're never going to end up in the right place here. And it takes time to reassess, so it leaves people feeling uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah? Losing focus. And the idea that is losing focus sometimes on the end objective because you're taking up with the steps. It's a process issue. We need to do this and then we need to do that. So that's the next thing which is important, and you can lose the big picture.
Yeah, and I also find that process people like to be given one assignment at a time, because after that, it's hard for them to focus, and that's their strength. And then what's happened is you put them in a position of vulnerability or weakness, which then increases the fear factor.
Can be regarded as insensitive.
Why?
You're not listening to me. You're only concerned about. You're not taking my concerns seriously. Can't you see the effect this is having? And the intention isn't to do that, but that's how it can come across.
Okay.
It's more a concern to make sure everything is right rather than to make things difficult.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you think about it, again, tensions between different types of styles. So a process person working with a people person often acts out of emotion, how I feel about it, that's how I feel about the situation. And a process person is saying, no, there's a way to think about this systematically. And a clash between those two personalities is very difficult. Particularly, imagine if you're in leadership and you're a process person who's trying to make sure that we do systematically get things done so that we have an end objective, and the emotional people person is all over the, you know, thinking about different things. It's a clash of personalities, which makes then leadership very difficult.
especially if the process person is low in people score.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Then that just heightens the tension and much more quickly.
So if a process person would say to a people person, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, people person, you just minimize me as a human being.
Yeah.
Because this is how I feel.
Yeah.
This is how I think. This is how I act. And you just told me that feeling is not
legitimate.
Yeah.
I'm lacking vision. It's fine to assess what's coming next to get to the objective. But what about all the other things that nobody's ever discussed with you? So sometimes being aware of new ideas and new vision and going in new directions is more difficult. Thinking of an alternative way to get somewhere is okay, but thinking of a new place to go is more difficult.
Because of a lot of ambiguity there, and ambiguity is not the world of the process person.
And then being inflexible. We've already decided, we've already discussed this. This is the best thing to do. Why are you bringing it up again?
If you get into a debate with a process person, you better have done your homework. Because they have. And to debate with them is going to be quite a challenge if you haven't done your homework. Fair enough? Okay. Yeah, stand up, process people.
Each of these strengths, as you all determine that.
Yes.
Because the idea people are approximately 10% of the overall population, many times they feel they're alone and they're the only ones. And so they feel isolated, and that in itself is discouraging. So to discover that there are others that are like you and to share time together is often a very encouraging thing. But because the idea person, their mind is creative, they love change, they see the vision, they have ideals, you know, what could we accomplish as an organization? And that then they challenge the leadership about what we should be doing, what we could accomplish. How does the leadership interpret that challenge?
Criticism.
Yep. So pretty soon the idea person, by the way, it doesn't matter if you reject an idea. They've got 8 or 10 more just waiting, you know. So that's all right. Throw that one out. But how about this one? What happens now is the idea person comes across as somebody who's very, very critical. They're never satisfied. We can never please them. And this is how you're being interpreted. It's not saying what you are, but how you're being interpreted. So very often then, the leadership will find ways of marginalizing you or maybe start praying that, you know, you get reassigned somewhere else. Now, here's what happens. Because the idea person is challenging the status quo, most of us are in organizations that are conservative. And so conservative means you conserve the status quo. You conserve our values and our organization, our purpose. And what you're doing is you're challenging the status quo. And that creates threat to leadership. And so very often idea people have difficulty with longevity in Christian organizations. Some of the most creative, beautiful, genius people I know didn't last very long when they entered Christian ministry. And that is really sad. So now if we understand what the idea person is doing, but also the idea person understands what's happening, how you're coming across, then if both of us can meet in the middle, we can manage this. We can work together. We can claim the best of both worlds, and we can be stronger for both kinds of people to exist and coexist and to work together and to synergize for the kingdom of God. But we've got to understand, and we've got to be willing to see the best and work with the best and not think the worst about the other person so quickly. Because usually the worst is not what's really there. What they're giving us usually is the best. But because we don't particularly like it or because it's not like who I am, I interpret it as the worst. It's called negative attribution. When you're not like me, something's wrong with you. And then the tension. So the other thing,
My experience with idea people, really in many different cultures now, is that they're also the people that start to give up on life. And they throw out Christianity. Sometimes they're suicidal because they just can't make it work. People don't get it, you know, and so they start to give up and they start to find that life isn't worth living after a while. And I was at one conference where four or five people came up to me afterwards, and they were all suicidal. They were young people, by the way, which was really sad because they were young people.
How can we create, as leaders, how can we create an environment for those people to feel welcomed? You know,
validated, right?
Validated.
I mean,
accepted.
You know, like to have somebody in the team who feels suicidal because you're not listening to them or something. It's not, you know. So what would be the key points that, you know, because, you know, we as, for example, as action people or then people, we sometimes just don't feel that that's important.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What would be the key issues that we should focus on?
All of us need to be valued. I think that's just a core need of the human being. You value the idea person by listening to them. And saying, you know, you've got a lot of ideas here, and there's some things that I think I need to, you know, work with. If the organization is in a mode where it's trying to plan for the future, you want their input. Now, if they're not in the management team or the leadership team, you call them in and you say, here's what we're thinking about. The idea person is not so disturbed by the fact that you hear them and then don't do anything with their thoughts. That's not what disturbs them. It's that they're not heard in the first place. And that's a kind of a wholesale rejection of who they are. And then they see the organization making these stupid moves out there, from their perspective it is, and then they just give up, you see. So if they're heard, you're valuing them. The likelihood is, if you hear them well, there are pieces of that that you're going to want to incorporate in your leadership team as you vision the future.
You know, the thing that comes to my mind when you ask that question is Proverbs 29:18, right? Without vision, the people die.
Yeah.
And we need the idea people because they cast the vision. They define the future for us. And if we don't have people like that on our team, we will not survive. So they're critical. Now, how we kind of work through the vision and how we get there and how we account for it and all the other pieces that we need, that needs to be managed or led. But if I were a visionary person and felt that sense of loss, that sense of almost there's no hope, I'd want someone to tell me, no, in fact, we need you because we can't move forward without your sense of call, your sense of vision and where you're headed. You're critical to what we're doing.
And one of the reasons why I like this particular instrument is it helps me understand how the members of the body of Christ need each other and how we've got to function together. And if we do, the synergism is phenomenal. But we've got to think the best about each other. And part of that is understanding each other. And then we can identify the best. And the individuals can say, but here are factors that are limiting my best coming out. So if I know I'm going to come across as critical, one of the things that I do is I give a lot of affirmation to the leadership. I mean, you guys are working hard, you're doing wonderful things, you're dedicated. But here, and then in that context, you say, here's a thought you might want to consider. But if you start out with, here's a thought you might want to consider, it, Carl.
I was going to say, idea people like room to breathe.
Yeah.
So to be managed in a space where leadership allows us to exercise our creative freedom is really healthy. A practice that I have used when working with idea people is to kind of offer them a yes and approach. So as they are creative brainstorming or as they're exchanging ideas, and they want to get things done, it's yes and. So, great, tell me more about that. And as they continue to process through that, not all ideas will end up coming into action, but it allows them to breathe and to process through it. And then through that, it's a validation. I also think idea people like to be in charge. So given a team, it's really great to then exercise that brainstorming ability, because then the team can kind of execute. But as someone who likes to be managed, it's a, like, let me kind of process my own way.
And I would also say, you know, for you idea people, if you've ever felt the way Duane just described you, you know, you also have to be processive to others.
Yep.
So I always tell my idea people is probably a good way to approach your vision or your ideas is to say something like, here's my idea. Don't hold me accountable for it because I might change my mind tomorrow.
That's true. Yeah. And if you don't say that, you come across as inconsistent. And yesterday you said that, now today. Well, where are you anyway?
Flexibility and balance. So if we're in a group setting and we see actually there's a bit of a gap in terms of some of those skill sets, we tend to try and fill that gap. Although we like to think we do more than fill the gap, if that makes sense. But we have that flexibility in a group context because we understand, and this is coming down to this bit, we feel like we understand the DNA of each of those, because mm-hmm. we have a little bit of the action, the process, the people and the ideas in us. And so we feel like we understand, and therefore that kind of is a helpful point, which means we actually we feel we're helpful in the whole team building process and actually trying to bring. And I think complementary to that is we feel that often we can bring a good perspective, a good overview in terms of understanding vision as well and where we need to get to. The fourth point, which I suppose partly stems out of these three, is the ability to communicate effectively. We understand the people that we're talking to again mm-hmm. because we understand the approach with which they're coming from, so we feel we can communicate that fairly well. And then finally, in terms of strengths, enabling healthy progress. So we're not too wrapped up in being people-orientated that we won't move forward. We're not too wrapped up in process. We're not too wrapped up. We kind of will help try and get to a position and say, look, this is the deadline. How do we get there? So those are probably our five strengths. I hope there's more.
This ability to sort of transcend all the different styles is similar to me to someone who can speak multiple languages.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in France, I speak French. When I'm in Germany, I speak German. And that ability to move between languages and cultures, not just the language, but the cultures, is really the strength of the blend. The problem is they think they're German, or they think they're French, or they think they're Italian, when in fact they're not.
Which leads us nicely.
Which is right, exactly.
Limitations. Because actually, the first limitation is we are not specialists.
Yeah.
So, we joke that the sky is the limit for us as blended people. It's not true. And one of the things I know is that you're limited only by your imagination. But our imaginations are not as good as the ideas people. So we really are not specialists. We're a little bit jack of all trades. And actually, interesting enough, part of that is we suffer from inner conflict sometimes, because sometimes in a group you see this tension between, you know, the different groups, the people's process, the action. And sometimes we're a little bit torn about how to take that group forward. So even though we may not show it, we will feel that sort of inner turmoil, inner conflict, and sometimes that would paralyze us. Here's another one, operating at over 100% capacity, tendency, slightly workaholic, wanting to achieve, wanting to make lots of different things happen all at once, so we tend to overcommit because people say, yeah, but we really need you, can you come and do this? So we tend to overcommit. Here's an interesting one. We tendency to be quietly arrogant. Sometimes because people want us, we tend to think, yes, we can really help solve this. And actually, that is an attitude we need to check within ourselves. Because if we're moving towards arrogance, we're missing out on the skill set that we actually have. We're overlooking it. And actually, there's an interesting one we came up with at the end, is that we can have blind spots. Even though we think we understand the situation, sometimes we read the situation a little too quickly. We miss out and we make certain assumptions what's going on in the room and who's coming from what point. And that can be really unhelpful. Five limitations, five strengths.
Very organized.
And we're really organized, so that's six strengths, five limitations.
Yeah. Any comments on the blend?
I'm thinking of this blend people as, you know, it's hard to put them in one box because there's always someone who is a bit stronger in action, a bit stronger in process, mm-hmm. right? I think even, I don't know about you, but like, I would perceive myself actually as a blend person, not people. But it's also like, there's one direction that is a little bit stronger than others. So, mm-hmm. like, it's really hard to say blend people. Everyone would be different,
well,
a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, we're in some ways we're all blends, right? Because we're yes. all little pieces of all four styles. Right. So in a sense, you know, we're all blends at some level. But what you got to realize is that if you're a technical blend, and the numbers indicated is that you are, as someone I think David just said, you're a jack of all trades and a master of none. So you know seven languages, but you don't know seven cultures. And it's hard, and you become egotistical, right? Because you think, gosh, I can move from color from you know, language group to language group. When in reality, you just know a little bit about that particular culture. And it's a great skill. I mean, you know, you live in a context where you know everyone's multilingual. Well, in the United States, that's not the case. And so when we meet someone who can speak two or three or four languages, we esteem them. And we think they know more than we do, when in reality, they know pieces, but not all. And that's the danger.
Let me talk about decision-making and the leader, the blend leader. Generally speaking, they agonize over decisions. Why would that be the case?
Well, for example, if I have to make a decision of action, and if I know that if I make this action...
If you take an action perspective.
Yeah, if I take an action perspective, then I know, or I'm already agonizing because the decision is hurting somebody, so my people side is actually already hurting for that decision.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make the decision, but my action person, you know, the yeah. action side is saying, you have to make this decision, you have to go. And the people perspective is saying, no, it's going to hurt so much, this person, just don't do it.
So for the blend people, decision-making is often an agonizing kind of thing because as you look at it from different perspectives, you would come up with different answers. So very often they postpone decisions as long as possible. The other thing is if they talk with somebody about their decision, they'll talk about it from this perspective, and then they'll talk about it from this perspective, and they come across as wishy-washy. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean, this and this? But there are two more, you know. And so you end up confusing people. And sometimes it's hard to even understand oneself because your mind is constantly in those different zones. Other observations? We didn't clap for the idea people. They didn't mind because that generally happens anyway, but let's do that. And then, so other observations about the blend person. They have wonderful skills in cross-cultural kinds of situations because they're already flexible, mobile, seeing multiple perspectives, and it seems to me they have a little bit of an easier job.
But I think, can I just add to that? I think for blend people, the change is like life. You know, it's like we change. It's like, how can you not change?
Yeah.
So
that's
it's
right.
Difficult to understand, for example, people like process people. It's like, why don't I? It's like change. Come on, that's life.
Yeah.
So sometimes, especially I think in this on this level, the process and the blend people probably could be the tension, like the biggest tension.
Sure.
Like the most natural things for those two groups are just extremely different. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I just feel like, you know, like you live, you know, as a blend person, you live.
What does the action person do under stress? They become hyperactive, mm-hmm. typically. Go faster, go farther, go longer. What does a process person do under stress?
Go slower. Think about the process.
That's right. They go slower and they get into isolation. They isolate themselves to think, to reflect. What went wrong and how can we fix it so it doesn't happen again? So they need that time alone, quiet, peaceful time. What does a people person do under stress?
Going
Generally, move towards a friend that they can talk to, unburden themselves. And if the stress is great, they will often cry. I mean, crying is part of the release of the stress. And so there's that kind of explosion of emotion, or just the talking. Either one, if the talking does it, that's fine. What does the idea person do under stress? They walk away. They look for an escape. And the escape is into some kind of a fantasy world very often. And nowadays, it's into video games or Harry Potter kinds of books. But somehow, they're in a world where they escape the problems of this world. And other people have problems, but they enjoy that. The blend person, who knows what they do under stress?
We'll do all four.
But it's always to find balance. And if they're in action too much, they got to get towards people or get alone or whatever. Somehow, it's always coming back to balance. Now, here's a quick, we're going to go about 2 or 3 minutes over here. So I come home, let me just get this in my head right now, and Dave will get ready to distribute these. My wife is a people person. Let's say I'm a process person. That's not true, but let's say it for now. And I've had a heavy day because I spend much of my day with students and in counseling, and that's the way it was early in our marriage. And so at the end of the day, what am I going to want to do as a process person? Get alone. Get quiet. Get away from people. My wife has had 2 children in diapers. What's she going to want to do as an 18 in people? Talk. So I come home. We kiss hello. And how was your day? Well, she says it's kind of stressful. Children are this. So-and-so called and, you know, they're having real problems and so on. And I say, well, that's great. I say, and I start walking away, you know, finding a place somewhere. Oh, and then it dawns on her. And she says, how was your day? I says, well, it was really pretty stressful. And she says, oh, well, tell me about it. And I'm trying to move, and she's following me. And she says, and then she says to herself, if I could just get him to talk about it, he'd be fine. You see what happens here? She's trying to solve my stress issue in the way in which her stress is resolved. And so I turn around and think, stay calm. And I say, oh, you know what? Your day was stressful too. I get it. Here's a piece of paper. Sit down at the kitchen table. And on this side, you know, and I'm giving her the process person's resolutions. In trying to minister and help the other person with their stress situation, we're increasing it. We're actually damaging, making the situation worse. But with this information, that doesn't have to be the case. Information now allows us to serve the other person in ways that ministers, liberates, encourages, strengthens, nurtures. And it works, and as leaders then, your first job as leader is to show people the servanthood of Christ. And this is one way of understanding how you serve somebody whose frame of reference is different from yourself. The power to change us. So you've got a sheet of paper now. These are the sample responses. And then you've got another sheet of paper. This is probably the most important one. This last one, number 9. And the reason is, in Scripture, there's a person who goes to look in the mirror, and he sees himself and he walks away unchanged. That person falls under the condemnation of the Lord because he saw what needed to be changed and he didn't. This sheet will help you affirm, but also help you to think about your leadership and what you may want to change in your leadership, what you may want to change in your marriage, what you may want to change in your parenting. So do the biblically faithful thing. Look in the mirror. What's God telling you? Go from there.